Session number 10420, Rule
23. Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 23. You're in Cyprus now, Colonel. What happened next?
Well, we were on the banks of the Salt Lake, and you could look across the Salt Lake to this mosque, which was surrounded by trees, and on the banks of the Salt Lake, so in a very arid part of the island. And while we are talking about it, I and three others, I think there were officers, went to see it from Kokini to Mithia, to which we went later on after we'd left the banks of the Salt Lake and Larnaca. Now, the Haramam Teka was allegedly a relative of Muhammad, and she had fallen from her mule and had a bad fall and was died. And Muhammad is alleged to have raised an enormous rock over her so that people couldn't see her and to save her from the heat of the Cypriot sun. And it was a great place for the women folk of the island and other women from all over the Middle East to visit. And it was also a place where the Turkish Navy raised and lowered their flags as they passed that part of the coast of Cyprus. It was a very holy place indeed. And four of us went there with a corporal of the Cypriot volunteer, Cypriot Defense Force. And we met there, if I remember rightly, two cousins. One was a Turkish Cypriot who had been to Oxford and was in the forestry department of the Cypriot forestry department, and the other one was a clerk in the court at Nicosia. And of course there was the imam, and it was said that when the women folk went to kneel in front of the grave of the Haramam Teka, they didn't like it because this huge rock was balanced in midair and there was no support, and that somebody arranged that the rock would be supported by bricks at either end to satisfy all these women, not tourists but pilgrims. And we went there, and we met these two Turks, young Turkish people, and we had very nice coffee or something like that with the imam, and they then induced the imam to go around the corner out so he wasn't with us. And the one at Oxford pulled the curtains back from the shrine and said, "There you are, now you can see it." And which was, for us, it was an extraordinary adventure. And I suppose we had to take our shoes off when we entered in, because you always have to when you go into a mosque. But there was this huge rock supported on either end by bricks, and below it, underneath it, was the grave of the Haram Mumtaka. And I can well imagine that any pilgrim kneeling under there would indeed have got a shock if been terrified for this vast rock propped up. And the Oxford student or the Oxford graduate said, of course, well, I don't believe that this rock ever hung there. I mean, it's all mythical. I mean, it just couldn't. And the clerk from the Nicosia, his cousin, the clerk from the Nicosia court, said, well, I know it did hang there because it was my great-grandfather or grandfather that actually built the property that was in. But it was a fascinating thing to be able to do, for Christians to be able to do. Well, the other thing that interested me, was, of course, inside a mosque like that, it's spotlessly clean and tidy. And we went in there, and the imam pointed out, high up round inside the mosque, the names of all the prophets of Muhammad. And Jesus Christ was one of them, on little dam-shaped shield all the way round. But then, after we'd had a look inside, our guides took us round back, round the corner, closed the curtains, and we had more coffee, I think, and sat and talked to the imam in a very delightful surroundings. And it was a fascinating experience. We discussed the situation in Cyprus and the Muslim religion, and as opposed to Christian. I remember they said that Ramadan was only for the rich, and they ate too much after the moon had set or after the sun had set night, and it was a complete fiasco, really, so far as the rich were concerned. But that was, I did that from Kafini to Mithya. Now let's go back. We left on the 12th of August to move to Kafini to Mithya to be a sort of reserve flying column. And again, we left at night so that nobody could see us moving from the air. There were no Italian planes scouting across the island. And we arrived at about 1 o'clock. And our positions were, we lived very spread out around the village of Kafini to Mithya. And we were encamped under the fruit trees and olive trees, and they were sort of Greek allotments and little farms all under the trees, these orchards. And it was there that we started building a keep, which would, in the event of the Germans dropping parachutes on the island, the quartermaster and all the stores would go into this deep keep. And we built that hidden away under the trees, as I say, in the orchard. However, we used to go and make reconnaissances. Our role was only in the northwest corner of the island, Kyrenia and along the north coast to Morphou and then back again to towards Nicosia. And one had to go and make reconnaissance of all the roads and the lanes and the countryside, all in that particular area. And I know I went once or twice to Kyrenia, which was a beautiful drive. There's a high range of hills along the north coast, and you climbed up through the Kyrenia Mountains and then you drop down to Karina itself. And it must, and I suppose today is a very lovely place for tourists. There was the Dome Hotel. It was all very shut up, and there were no tourists there. But I know now that it's a very popular place because my actual brother went. My brother went there actually only a couple of years ago, and it's in the Turkish area now. But areas didn't matter to us. Well, on the 28th of August, well, I'd been warned that I was had to go on a senior officer's course to Helwan in Egypt, and the course actually lasted from the 28th of August to the 27th of September, and I had difficulty in getting back to the island, and I eventually got back on the 12th of October. We did do training, of course, on the island, but primarily we were to be, there was always a company standing to dash off and deal with German parachutists should any arrive. As I think I mentioned, Crete had just fallen, and it was anticipated that the Germans might well do the same to Cyprus.
How did you find the Cypriots?
Oh, well, now you've got to remember that I think I'm right in saying in 1931 there'd been a trouble, and they had burnt the governor's house down, stores, and they'd been extremely difficult, and a company of the Royal Welsh Fusiliers was there, a company was already on the island, and it was left to them to put it down. And so there was a certain amount of ill feeling. But at the same time, when we drove round the island, the people couldn't have been kinder. But the Greeks were, I don't think were very pleased. Well, in some ways they were pleased to see us, because they knew that if we weren't there, the Germans would be. But we never had any trouble, none at all. And if we drove round the island along the north coast from Kyrenia, they'd fling oranges into our trucks and that sort of thing and wave. But there was some were surly, but we never had any trouble at all.
What about your actual living conditions? Were you living in tents? Or?
Oh, we were just living in tiny little bivvy tents under the trees. I mean, one just crept into a little tiny tent. That's all the chaps were. And everything was done outside. All the meals were eaten outside. But there, some of them didn't want to see us go. Now, Claude Boystone, who was one of my subalterns in one of my companies, had his little bivvy tent on a Greek allotment, I think, almost you might call it an allotment. And the Greek was in tears when Boystone slept. And then again, I think the last night I was in there, the last night before we set off to, at the end of at the end of, it would be about the 3rd of November, I think we left. Last night, I went to a CO's conference, and I passed a Greek house where there was a wedding going on. There was a little band playing a mandolin and a fiddle, rather playing the same sort of tunes, and they were dancing just as if they were Highlanders. Well, I know that two officers were asked to that wedding. One or two was actually asked to the wedding. The wedding ceremony went on for 3 days. But I know in the moonlight I walked back to my tent, and I was quite intrigued by looking in at the window of the house where they were dancing, and very much like the Highlanders did. Anyhow, on the 28th of August, I set off to the senior officer school at Helwan. Now, Helwan is a suburb of Cairo, upstream from Cairo, and I was told to report to Nicosia Aerodrome and on the 28th, and I duly did, and there were far too many people to climb into the Bombay bomber, which was going to take us to Heliopolis, the airport at Cairo. However, I managed to get on board. This was early in the morning, about 8 o'clock in the morning, I think it was. And I always remember the crew of the airplane crawled out of a dugout, and then the pilot turned the airplane round and obligingly covered us all with a thick layer of sand before we got on board. And we flew over Larnaca, so it was rather interesting to see our operations from the air and our work there. Then we flew on to Haifa, and we flew around Haifa, and then we flew to Lida and landed at Lida Airport, lower down Palestine, and then there was a delay there, and I got another plane, I think, and we flew to Heliopolis, and the Royal Air Force took me to the mess. I had a drink at the mess. I got a taxi to the station and caught a train up to Helwan. And there I was until the 27th of September. Now, no need to go here into all the details of what one learnt, but at the weekends, and whenever we had a spare day, I used to go up to Cairo because I had a lot of friends there in the Northumberland Hussars who'd been brought out of Crete. And I had a particular friend called Philippines who used to live just 4 miles down the road here. And I used to go to his flat and we used to have dinner parties and all sorts of people there. There was on the course with me a major, Lord Feversham, who was a major in the Yorkshire Hussars, and he and I became very friendly, and he also knew Philippines, and so we often used to go up there together. And I used to go to the sporting club with a fellow called Thring, who was on the course. He was a Norfolk yeoman, a Somerset yeoman, and he was a brother lawyer in Bath. Very nice chap indeed. And there was also a chap called Farrar in the 15th Yorks who'd come from Cyprus with me. It was a splendid course. We used to do orders and appreciations and do tactical exercises without troops in the desert. I know I'm one... first of all, deal with the chief instructor. There was a chief instructor there called Hamilton. We called him Hammy. And he had commanded the Black Watch in Cyprus, and it had was about to have a nervous breakdown, and they had to get rid of him. And he was going to be sent to the IBD, the Infantry Base Depot. And then somebody said, no, send him to the senior officer school as chief instructor. And he was brilliant. Brilliant. Well, I'll never forget him telling us that great minds don't always think alike. And he told us that he, in all his glory, in all his uniform, had been ridden out of Colchester on his horse, and for quite a while a small boy had run alongside, and they'd neither spoken at all. And Hammy thought, well, the boy's no doubt thinking, what a splendid figure I am on my horse, nor my uniform. And he, Hammy then started to say what wasn't a bad sort of day to the little boy, the small boy. And the small boy merely replied, by gum, sir, your bum must be sore. So great minds don't always think alike. But that's one of the incidents. And Hammy could make up a scheme without a note, with his brain working the whole time. Again, I often wonder what happened to him. Anyhow, I was there. The course went from the 28th of August to the 27th of September. Well, it turned out to be extremely difficult to get back from Cairo to Cairo to Cyprus. I tried to get an air passage, and I tried to get a ship, and eventually I got a ship, but not before, as you can see, the long delay. I know I was in one transit camp and read a punch dated 1916. This was at Port Said. And it was really most annoying, the trouble one had trying to get a flight back to Cyprus. But eventually I got a ship on the Khedivial line, a Khedivial mail line, and it had one time been the Hadrian of the Tyne Tees Shipping Company. It was an awful ship for rolling about, and what it must have been like in a nor'easter off Teesmouth or the Tyne, I just cannot imagine. Most uncomfortable. But it was, on this occasion, I felt a bit squeamish to start with, but it was reasonably comfortable. I had a cabin all to myself, and I dined with the chief engineer, who was a hard-bitten jock, and he told me that he had seen the old 68th foot off from Bombay for the South African War, and Lord Clarendon had bid them farewell. We passed along the Palestinian coast, which we could see, eventually I got back to the battalion headquarters in Fakini, Tunisia. So there I'd already met, funnily enough, whilst in Cairo on one occasion, I suppose on the steps of Shepherd's, but I met him, I think it was on the steps of Shepherd's, the CO, Colonel Victor Yate. And he told me that he had left the battalion and was no longer the CO, and that he wasn't feeling at all well, hadn't been feeling at all well, and had been posted to the IBD, which he eventually did command. Well, I got back to the battalion and found Sammy Battiscombe in command. I had met at one of my parties that I'd been to somebody in the MS branch, the military secretary branch, who told me that Sammy Battiscombe was now commanding. And I was wondering whether or not I was going to get second in command. However, I suffered a great disappointment, because I found that a chap there who'd come a second in command, known as T.B. Robinson. I don't now know what happened to him. But T.B. Robinson was the senior subaltern when I joined in 1926. And in 1938, he had been given command of the duplicate battalion, the 10th battalion of the regiment, and had really been a disaster, and he'd been sent back to civil life. He had attempted to get into the Home Guard and had failed. He was back in civil life, and he offered to come rejoin as a major. And I could never stand him. And to my horror, when I came back from this course, there was P.B. Robinson as second in command. And I was bitterly disappointed. And rarely was. I thought, well, this is too awful words. One had quite a varied military career so far. Admittedly, I was very young, and I didn't really have to wait very long, because by the time, in the year's time, I was second in command and then commanding officer. But so as not to have to live in headquarter mess with P.B. Robinson, whom I really had no brief for at all, I took over B Company. I left headquarter company and I went to B Company, which was my old company, which I had raised here in Barnard Castle. They were nicknamed the Teasdale Irregulars. That's the company's nickname. And they were in at a very low ebb. There's no doubt about it. They were very low ebb indeed. And I moved right away from Italian headquarters, and we had a lovely company headquarter mess overlooking the plain round Cucini Comitia and looking towards Mount Tudor and the famous mountains of Cyprus.